Welcome back to Snap Judgment, the perfect match episode. When last we left, a man and a woman decide to spend a year together on a desert island. And it is not just another day in paradise. Snap Judgment.
Although it sounds all very Blue Lagoon, this falling in love with the island, Tuin was in fact quite a hostile little island. It wasn't a beautiful tropical paradise at all. I think I, in a sense, chose to fall in love with it. It was a survival tactic. And there he was, poor Gerald. I mean, he was just more and more unresponsive, to my enthusiasm. And more and more sunk into what we could unkindly call it apathy. But, you know, I really think it was a genuine kind of depression. But the pain in his legs and maybe the pain in his heart as well affected him very, very badly. I was the lucky one. I was the one who fell in love with the island. Later, he told me he fell in love with me in a way that he didn't really expect to. So during the days, I lived in my other little world, loving it, and we were civilized with one another over our little meals, but trapped at night, I mean, inches apart in that tiny tent for 12 sweaty hours at a stretch, that was a different story. And it was impossible to escape what was happening between us. There was resentment, probably, on both sides. There was unfulfilled lust. We had the disappointment in each other, I didn't always disguise, as I might have more kindly done, how I felt about him not getting up and being more manly. Our relationship really fell into what I called a black nadir. It couldn't have got much worse. He called me every single name under the sun. If we'd been in civilization, I'd have packed my bags and left. But we couldn't. At night then, I mean, we just curled away from each other as far as we possibly could in the tight space of that tent. And it was scary. And he could have strangled me in his anger, and no one would have known that I hadn't been caught by a shark if my body disappeared. I thought of leaving Gerald often. I never thought of leaving the island. Well, we wouldn't have been mad enough to go to an uninhabited island that definitely had no water. I mean, nobody would be that mad. But then if you think about it, if an island has been uninhabited, nobody really knows what the water situation is like. We rigged up a water catchment system because we were aware of a possible shortage of water on this island. And we began rationing our tiny little supplies quite early on. We were having a cupful of water twice a day at one point, and just that is not enough. I mean, it was seriously hot there. A lot of that water would have come from rainfall, and time again, we'd see clouds go over and raining on other islands, but not on our island. And that became something very troubling. So, and not moving, that to me was the worst part. Having to conserve energy. Because by then, I'd stopped feeling energetic. I'd stopped feeling like a wonderful golden creature on a desert island, having a terrific time and feeling high. I was a skinny old woman at the age of 25. Both Gerald and I knew, although we didn't talk about it, very British of us, that if something good didn't happen soon, like a good rainfall, we could die. This island would be the death of us. It was a bad scenario, a very bad scenario. All the hostilities that had been between us were in fact very, very petty when this much bigger problem came as something that we had to face together, the shortage of water. Gerald would say, from his supine position on the green towel, he'd say, "Might rain today, Lou. Might rain today, Lou." And I'd say, yep, might. It could rain today. I remember Gerald looked at me once. He said, "I looked at you, Lou. I looked at you, you know, with your little shriveled veins sticking out of your legs like an old woman, like grapes they were. And I thought you were going to die. I thought this woman's going to die and it's my fault." Gerald at that time was very down. He was just about crippled by the coral ulcers in his legs, and that was so demeaning for a man who'd been very proud of his physique and how strong he was. I mean, it was just horrible for him. And he lay in camp day after day on this horrible old green towel. And I remember one day when I came across him like that, I sat down on a rock and just looked out over the sea, and it was a beautiful day. And maybe I had a moment of very strong nostalgia, because I sang a ballad about wild mountain time in Scotland. One night when we were just lying awake and hoping for the sound of rain, that sound came. And that was a very, very special moment indeed. It must have been, because Gerald and I didn't very often hug at that stage. We turned to each other and we just said, rain, rain, and hugged. And it was quite a euphoric moment. Although we had a lot of bad words between us, I did realise that Gerald was very hurt by my having much more of a warm relationship with the island than I had with him. It was unfair. I can see that. Eventually, towards the end of the year, we were rescued. I mean, there's no two ways about this. And if the islanders of the Torres Strait hadn't happened by Tuyong Island one day when I was fishing skinny as a toast rack on a rock and come to see what on earth was happening with these crazy white people, I might not be here talking to you today. They came and immediately saw what the problem was. Not enough food, not enough water. And basically, they sorted us out. What happened then was that Gerald became very useful to the islanders because it turned out that he was a very skilled mechanic, and their main means of earning a living was crayfishing from little motorized canoes, and their engines were forever going wrong. They wanted to take him to their island and for him to live there with them. But I did not want our island year on Tuyong to end. We set off with the idea of staying for 1 year on this island, and we were going to do it, or I was going to do it, even if Gerald wasn't going to do it. The islanders from Bardu Island would come and collect Gerald and take him off to work on engines on their island. I knew that Gerald was being pulled away, that another lifestyle was offering itself to him by these people who revered him for his skills. And my respect for him absolutely shot up when I realised he was so good at this particular skill. I was also watching this man transform. First of all, he was getting his physique back. He was now eating better. They would bring flour, and I would make little Scottish scones and things on the open fire. And he loved that. He loved that kind of food. But he was also getting his own self-respect back. He was doing something he knew really well how to do. I mean, I was just seeing a different man emerge. And I thought, well, maybe this is the moment to get us together physically. And why not? I mean, I made a deliberate decision. One day he'd come back from the island, and I'd be ready to give him a nice evening. And so it happened. And in fact, it was fun. And we did it again and again and again. So, yeah. And he became very appealing and sweet to me as a man. Perhaps inevitably, there came a time towards the end of the year when and the chief of Bardu had offered for him to come and live with the islanders on Bardu Island and be a chief mechanic. Gerald made it very clear that he wanted me to be a proper wife and stay with him, maybe even have a child with him, and that he'd like us to make a life together there on Bardu. He wanted us to stay together. He wanted the marriage that had been such a forced affair in the beginning. He wanted that marriage to be real now, and I didn't. I was going to leave. There wasn't a particularly poignant parting with Gerald. It was factual. It was, goodbye then, from my part. And bye, Lou, from his part. He just got on with some work, and I think he just needed to do that. We can't choose who we fall in love with, and I didn't fall in love with him. I fell in love with the island. And I got into a tiny, tiny little two-seater plane, and we flew over the island, so I was able to see every part of the island's body, if you like, that I'd explored in detail over that year. And that was a very poignant moment indeed for me. It was just this other woman, a patient travelling to hospital, behind me, the only other person on the plane apart from the pilot, and she saw me crying, and she just said, "Oh, small island, funny kind place." Ah, she just summed it up perfectly for me.
Friends, believe me when I tell you there is so much more to the Lucy Irvine story than what we were able to fit in here. You can find a link to her three truly fantastic books, Castaway, Faraway, and Runaway, on our website, snapjudgment.org. And don't worry about Gerald. He found another wife in the Torres Straits Islands. They lived happily for a long, long time. As for Lucy, she got married, had kids, and eventually moved with those kids to another deserted island. Today, you'll never believe it, but Lucy is living in a caravan in rural Bulgaria, where she runs an animal rescue organization. Find a link as well to that remarkable work on our website, snapjudgment.org. Original sound design for that piece by Leon Morimoto, and the story was produced by Anna Sussman. When Snap Judgment, the Perfect Match episode returns, we've got the best date ever. But first, I've got a great big pile of free stuff over here. It is free. You want it? I don't think that you do, because free stuff ain't worth it. But things that matter, things that you put into your mind, things that inspire, that inform, that provoke, things like that have value. Like this public radio station. This is not free. It takes a community to make this go, a community that you depend upon. Be a part of this thing that is a part of you. What is that number to dial?